Welcome to Studio 86, in-depth discussions with RIT newsmakers. Come on inside.
Welcome inside Studio 86. I'm Mike Safran of RIT University News Services. And with me inside Studio 86 today is Dan Scoville, who is a project manager and electrical engineer for the remote operated vehicle product line at Hydroacoustics Incorporated down the road from campus here in Henrietta. Yep. Where exactly is Hydroacoustics?
It's on the corner of Lehigh and 390 almost.
And in addition, you are one of our proud RIT electrical engineering alums from the Kate Gleason College of Engineering. And I would also add, Dan, I believe you're the first alum to be on Studio 86.
Oh, well, that's an honor.
And the reason why you're here, you are one of two shipwreck explorers. Maybe there's a better term.
No, we're just shipwreck enthusiasts, really.
Okay. Who, this past June, found the Revolutionary War-era British warship, 228-year-old, I believe.
Correct, yep.
Warship, the HMS Ontario, at the bottom of Lake Ontario.
Yep.
Boy, what a story this has been. I would say one of the most exciting stories that RIT is associated with, and we'll get to some of that in just a minute, but just a cool story. Can you tell me a little bit about the HMS Ontario and how it is that you happened to find it at the bottom of Lake Ontario?
Sure. Well, the HMS Ontario was an 80-foot-long British warship, and it was built here by the British to protect British-held ground in southern Canada and northern New York from the American rebels. Once the ship was built, it sailed Lake Ontario for most of that summer. And on its final voyage, it left Fort Niagara and was heading to Oswego to pick up a raiding party that it had dropped off earlier in the month, and it never made it. Hmm. It went down in a huge storm later that evening.
Halloween night, as I understand.
On Halloween night, exactly, in 1780.
How many people on board when it went down?
There was about 120 people on board. There's about 80-some people that are on the register for the ship. They would have been officers and commanders and the Marines on board and that sort of thing. And there were some women and children. The officers of the time period could have the women and children on the boat, and they would help do laundry and prepare food and that sort of thing. And then there was some American prisoners on board. There was about 30 American prisoners of war on board, all of which met their demise on that Halloween night.
Is it a myth that there's treasure aboard the ship?
Yeah, there's really no treasure aboard the ship. There's a myth that there was payroll, a British payroll on board, and it was going to be used to pay all the officers and the crew. But that's really not true. The only gold that would have been on that ship would have been in the captain's teeth.
Okay.
So really, there's no treasure on board the ship. But what the real treasure is the history on board that ship. The last people to see that ship fought in the Revolutionary War here in the U.S. So that ship is still intact. You can't even see any major damage, and it's really a time capsule of that period's history. So there'll be swords and military buttons, and there's 22 cannons on board, and all kinds of small arms for fighting battles. So there's really a real treasure trove of history there.
And you say it's in good shape, which kind of a surprise to you?
Well, ships on the bottom of Lake Ontario generally stay in pretty well-preserved shape as long as they're deep, and this ship is very deep. And it's really a factor of it's dark, there's no oxygen down there, and so they stay pretty well-preserved. But this ship went down in a very large storm, and when things go down in storms, you expect them to have been broken up a little bit before they sunk. And so I expected if we did find this ship that we would find it at least abused a bit. But this ship is really in good shape. It's completely intact. Cannons are still sitting on the upper deck. There's even some windows that aren't broken yet. So, it's really in a much better shape than I imagined it was going to be.
Now, you had, as I understand it, been searching for the HMS Ontario for about 3 years.
Yeah, that's correct, yep.
And Jim Kennard, who we mentioned is your shipwreck enthusiast partner,
yep.
Perhaps searching for this as many as three decades, 35 years or so?
He first built a sonar about 30 years ago, 35 years ago or so. And he thought, hey, there's treasure on board that ship. So he set out to find it and, very quickly realized that the positioning systems required to find these kind of things weren't available at the time. His sonar couldn't quite do the job. The area to search was just really large. And, you know, he really quickly, within a year, realized that there was really no chance of finding it. And then when he and I got together about 6 years ago, I brought the ability to dive deep, and then later on an ROV to dive in even deeper. And then we also upgraded to sonar, and with his sonar expertise and my diving expertise, we were able to push the limits that before we couldn't push. So about 3 years ago, we really started in earnest looking for the ship almost as a full-time hobby.
Which really explains, I guess, why it has been referred to as one of or the holy grail of shipwrecks in I think all of the Great Lakes, right? Not just Lake Ontario.
Yeah, that's correct. It is considered pretty much the holy grail of all the Great Lakes because it's such a historic ship from the Revolution, and having it completely intact makes it really good. And it's one of the oldest ships in Lake Ontario. It's not the oldest, but it may be the oldest ever found in the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. It is known that there's an older ship in the Great Lakes somewhere, but it's not been proven to ever been found.
So. Which one is that?
It's called the Griffin, and it was actually LaSalle's ship that sailed into the Great Lakes more than a few years ahead of the Ontario. And it was lost, and it's been written about, and LaSalle wrote about it, but it's not been proven to ever been found, and some people believe it will never be found, so we don't know. You know, history's still to be written there.
So that might be your next find, perhaps, that we hear.
Perhaps.
Now, you mentioned a moment ago the ROV, so let's turn a little bit to the remote-operated vehicle that you used help locate the HMS Ontario in Lake Ontario. Some of the technology used in the current ROV that you use, which, as I understand it, probably is a product of hydroacoustics.
Right.
But some of that technology came out of an RIT student project of a couple of years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, ROV started as my senior design project as an engineering student here at RIT. I got some great guys on my senior design team, and we made in 6 months a small ROV that was battery powered, runs from a fiber optic and a joystick and a laptop. And it really worked extremely well. And I've used it to explore 5 or 6 different shipwrecks now. And then after the initial project was over, you know, I was kind of looking for a new source of funding to continue building the project and, you know, keep it progressing. So eventually I end up selling the ROV intellectual property to Hydroacoustics. And then Hydroacoustics has helped support new development on the ROV in the last year and a half or so.
It'd be accurate to say then that some of this technology developed by you and your team here for a multidisciplinary senior design project was really integral in helping to find this ship, the HMS Ontario.
Absolutely. Largely, the ROV has been repackaged since it's been at Hydroacoustics, but and you know, an additional funding for sure has been added to it to make it a better product and more of a production product rather than a school project. But the underlying electronic circuits and software was done by, you know, students at RIT and myself. And in addition, once it was a Hydroacoustics product, some of those same guys that were on the original product were brought in as contract labor to Hydroacoustics and continued to work on their senior design project and help it to right up to the point it's been today.
And the remote operated vehicle, the ROV, I guess the huge benefit would it be it's able to go deeper than you could as a diver.
Right.
And stay down at those deeper depths.
Yep. The ROV is battery powered, and it's really the only limit to how long it can stay down is how long the batteries last. Currently, they last about 3 hours. Depending on what you're running, it could be shorter or less. But, you know, for a deep dive in Lake Ontario, a diver could only spend a very, very few minutes. And the benefit of the ROV is the ROV can go down. It'll videotape the entire dive for you for the whole 3 hours. And then when you want to bring it up, you just pull it up. So the ROV has been extremely helpful in helping us progress deeper into the lake and find more shipwrecks.
And certainly, as you mentioned, that video is a huge benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. That mm-hmm. You know, when you dive deep in the lake and you're going to take video of a shipwreck in person as a scuba diver, you know, you may do a 15-minute dive. You may only get 5 minutes. So in order to get the amount of time that we get with one dive on the ROV, you would literally have to spend an entire season diving with scuba.
Well, speaking of the video, you have that online available just for whoever would like to see it.
If at shipwreckworld.com, there's a two-minute video clip of some of the parts of the Ontario, some of the most notable parts of the bow stem, which has a very nice hand-carved scroll, and the quarter gallery windows, which was a set of windows that wrapped all the way around the stern of the ship where the captain's quarters were. So that's shipwreckworld.com. You can also, on shipwreckworld.com, read about our other discoveries in Lake Ontario. We found about six other ships.
Yeah, great. In fact, I saw the section on Lake Ontario shipwrecks.
Right. Yep.
Now, you also mentioned that you found, is it seven other shipwrecks in Lake Ontario?
Somewhere in that ballpark. Okay. I lost count, but it's seven or eight total shipwrecks. So we've even got a couple shipwrecks we haven't told anybody about yet. No point in telling them now. No one will pay attention until the Ontario kind of dies away.
Well, that brings up a good point too. You've received great attention from the media, and certainly not limited to locally Rochester and of course Toronto being on the other side of Lake Ontario. I think the media in Toronto had a special interest, but well beyond that.
Yeah, this wreck has really received worldwide attention since it's a British owned ship. The British obviously have great interest in the ship. We've even had newspapers from Taipei and Bangalore, India, and New Zealand and Australia. So really kind of put Lake Ontario on the map as far as shipwrecks.
Well, you also mentioned the interest from the British media because of the ownership issue.
Right.
I was reading some comments. It might have been on shipwreckworld.com. There's a little bit of a debate, I suppose, among just other enthusiasts.
Yep.
Like, should it stay at the bottom? Should it be brought up? And who actually owns it? Now, some people are saying, well, you know, the British, as soon as it started sinking, their ownership ceased.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that?
You know, I don't know whether the ship is owned by either British or Canada. There's some kind of debate going on where the ship wasn't actually sailed under the British Admiralty at the time. It was actually sailed under the British Army by Canada for the British Army. So, you know, I don't understand that piece of it completely. But, you know, we think it's owned by the British government. New York State thinks it's owned by the British government. And so, you know, we believe it's a war grave. And as a war grave, warships are never abandoned by the countries that own them. Therefore, the British government still owns it. You know, and as for whether it comes up or not, you know, everybody's got their own opinion, and I can see it both ways. It'd be great to put it in a museum and where the whole general public could come see the ship, you know, and at the same time, it's nice to leave it alone where it is. So bottom line for me personally, it comes down to it doesn't matter what I think on that. It's really out of my hands whether the governments decide to bring it up or not. And as long as it's brought up with dignity and preserved and kept kind of as an intact historical piece, you know, I don't have a big problem with it. You know, but really, my opinion on that doesn't matter. They're going to do what they decide to do.
Well, and in the meantime, we're just very grateful that we have this video.
Absolutely.
Thanks to you and Jim Kennard. And I understand there may be something in the works, perhaps like a TV documentary or something like that.
Yeah, we've been contacted by 12 TV documentary companies. And, you know, we're still in the very early stages of sorting through them and trying to understand which company to kind of sign up with. And, you know, we're very excited about how much that can bring the HMS Ontario to the public's eye. So we're excited about that. And there's a book being put out about this shipwreck now. So, you know, we're excited to be able to share the history that way. You know, if the ship never comes up, at least we'll have those things.
And lastly, I have to ask you, when you gave me a call a couple of weeks ago or so, almost a little sad, at least that's what I was detecting. Yeah, I think your words were, well, this is like the biggest find of my life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what do I have to look forward to now? And you're only 35 years old. Tell me about
that. I need to figure out what's next. And, you know, there are other shipwrecks in Lake Ontario for sure that are historic content, but nothing that would even come close to this. And even in the Great Lakes, it'll be difficult to beat this. And, you know, I really love this hobby. I want to keep doing it as long as we can afford to do it. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out what the next big thing is. That's a challenge to figure out all by itself.
Well, to the Griffin, perhaps. Was
maybe.
That was the name of the...
It's out there somewhere. So, you know, who knows? Maybe someday we'll venture across the Griffin on the bottom of the lake.
Okay. Well, Dan Scoville, thanks a lot for coming into Studio 86. And really, congratulations on this tremendous story. And, you know, we here at RIT certainly appreciate the fact that it had the RIT component early on. on and that you still are using that. And you actually still have a couple students, classmates or students that were on that project working as well.
Yep. The whole thing really started from an ROV standpoint, really started at RIT, and it's really gone better than I can have ever imagined. It's just the project went great, the people were great, the students were great, and I imagine it's going to still go farther in the future.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Tune in next time for another in-depth discussion from Studio 86. Studio 86 is recorded live in Building 86 on the RIT campus and is produced by RIT University News Services.